ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have seen yesterday that the first chapter has six sections and we have entered into the first section. And a section in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is called a Brahmana. Prathamam Brahmanam. And it is talking about a great Upasana called Ashva Upasana. And we have to keep in mind what is an Upasana, to take up a smaller, insignificant object and mentally, imaginatively superimpose upon it extraordinary qualities and be one with it, completely be merged with it. That is called Upasana. Again, a small example, a worshipper of Saligrama, which is a representative of Bhagavan Vishnu, even though it is a small piece of stone, and perhaps if you take a small hammer and give it a small blow, it will break into pieces. But that is not the point. That has to be considered as Bhagavan Vishnu himself. And Bhagavan Vishnu is what? He is all-pervading. He is the Brahman. He is unimaginable. And therefore we take some, it is called avalambana, or a small support, and superimpose upon it something huge, something noble, something great, which we would like to become. And this intensity of the desire to become is called bhakti. If somebody says, I have devotion to God, but I do not wish to become great as God, then that is not really truly bhakti. But we hope, in course of time, the understanding dawns, I have to come near and nearer to God. That process of coming nearer to God, until finally God absorbs us into himself, destroying any difference that can rise up in our minds, and thus removing the second. There is no second. Only I alone am. That state is expressed beautifully as Aham Brahmasmi. The purpose of the Upasana is slowly to become merged, to destroy one's ego and become one with Brahman. That is the purpose of any Upasana. Whether a Christian devotee contemplates on a cross or whether a Muslim contemplates turning to the west or a Krishna Bhakta takes up a small picture of Krishna and meditates upon it. Meditation also can be singing, not only meditating, but to sing and become absorbed in that singing, not in the singing, but in the bhava, the very emotion of that bhajan. That is called contemplation. And there was a great devotee called Narasimha Mehta. He was born in Gujarat and he wrote one of the most famous bhajans called Vaishnava Janato Tene Kahiye Jay Pida Parai Jane Re. Only that person alone deserves to be called a devotee who feels the sufferings, the pain, the difficulties of other people. Jay Pida. Pida means any type of suffering. Parai of other people, tene Vaishnava. Only such a person deserves to name. Why? Because that is what exactly God does. He feels. He doesn't say that I am different from this person. Why does a mother feel when the child is crying helplessly? Why does she go through so much of agony? Because she understands this is me. Sometimes saying this is mine and feeling this is me, there is not much difference. It is exactly the same. So that is the purpose of the upasana. The purpose of the upasana is to develop concentration and finest, noblest imagination and to expand our identity with so many others, so many other things, and that is called Chitta Vaishalyata, and to acquire purity and to develop that everything in this world of which I think is different from me is ignorance, and to think everything is me, that is pure knowledge. This is the purpose of the any upasana, and every single devotee aspiring to go to God, whether they may use the language, I want to go to Vaikuntha or Kailasa or Paradise or Kingdom of Heaven, these are all inadequate human words. But the meaning is, I want to go to nearer to God. Just imagine what happens when a dry stick is slowly taken nearer and nearer to the fire, and finally you throw it into the fire. What does it become? It becomes fire itself. Then there is no distinction. This is a fire stick separate from the fire. Fire absorbs and makes it as its own, as itself. That is the purpose of the upasana. Now, this upasana is a preparation so that our mind expands, and the more our mind expands, what happens? Our morality, that is, I cannot speak an untruth to myself. I cannot cherish a desire. I want to harm this person. I can't think. I want to give pain to this person. And on the contrary, I want to give everything I have to this person. Even to understand this statement, we require to exercise our imagination. Why? Because even while saying we want to identify ourselves with others, even in our mind, we are fully aware. We are not the other people. That is not upasana. A person not only must feel, he must have that knowledge. Feeling is different. Knowledge is different. Many people have no understanding what is the difference between knowledge and feeling. Suppose Ramakrishna sees a poor man. Then his knowledge is, this is me suffering. Swami Vivekananda says, this is me suffering. Holy Mother says, this is me suffering. And so, their feeling, first comes knowledge, then comes feeling. In our case, oh, if I go through that same suffering, how much I feel uncomfortable. So this person also must be feeling so uncomfortable. That's not the idea. The knowledge that there is absolutely no distinction, no difference, no second thing from anything. Ekameva advaitam. Advaitam. There is dvitiyo nasti. There is no second thing. That is called knowledge. So the purpose of upasana is to acquire that knowledge. As an example, a meditator on Indra, until he becomes one with Indra and feels I am Indra, that meditation still is an effort, sadhana, but he has not attained the goal. When a person says, Aham Indra Asmi, Aham Brahma Asmi, then that knowledge is complete. And then whatever be the happiness, bliss of Indra, of Chandra, of Surya, of Vaishvanara, of Prajapati, of Brihaspati, of Brahma, they all become his own. This is the understanding we must have about upasana. Now, a big question comes, that why at all upasana? Because we are living in a world and we call it creation. And it is an effect. Every effect must have a cause. And that cause, at this moment of our ignorance, we think cause is different and effect is different. A mother gives birth to a baby and mother is different, baby is different. That is the most people's understanding or misunderstanding. But when an Advaitin says that clay is now appearing as a pot, here clay is not giving birth and remaining separate. Clay itself is the pot. Pot is but nama and rupa. Vikaro namadeyam vacharambhanam. That's all. It is only a way of speech. That's all. There is nothing but clay in that pot. That is the true nature of upasanam, to feel this universe is nothing but Brahman. It is not like Brahman is somewhere sitting and like a potter creating a pot. Brahman himself, itself, herself has become this whole universe. And in order to understand that one, where are we now? We are, for us, the reality is the creation. Therefore, the teacher has to teach him, now you are seeing the universe as completely different, separate, as many number of objects, and you are separate from every other object. That is the worst manifestation of ignorance. Now we have to slowly remove that, what is called duality. Upasana is a form of removing that duality slowly but surely. This is called sadhana. So yesterday, if you still remember, why is the Upanishad, which is supposed to teach us the supreme knowledge of Brahman, that I am Brahman, is dealing with this upasana? Because we are thinking that I am in the world, I am in creation, I am a created being, I am separate from Brahman, I am not one with Brahman. And therefore, this is a process, twofold process or twofold results obtained through upasana. Slowly, as I approach Brahman through contemplation, first, my difference with the creation becomes smaller and smaller. My distance that I am separate from everything becomes less and less. And then, second, that I am also approaching Brahman. This lessening the distance from the world, which we are experiencing, is called approaching Brahman nearer and nearer. Because, really speaking, approaching the world as myself, approaching Brahman as myself, there is no difference at all. So, first, the scripture, that is, the Veda, accepts creation, not because it thinks that is the truth, but it knows, for us, it is the truth. And then secondly, how to slowly make us remove that ignorance. For that purpose, yes, the universe is real. You are thinking that you are separate from it. That is not real. The universe is real only in a limited sense. It is ever-changing. It is dependent upon consciousness. And it gives both happiness and unhappiness, and it cannot be relied upon. That's why it is not rhythm. It is unrhythm, non-rhythm, asatyam. That is called mithya. Yesterday also I explained the purpose of apavada. Apavada means removing this ignorance is not to deny. Because to deny, you have to say that there is an object. And it is not Brahman. That would be a totally wrong statement. Because other than Brahman, Brahman means infinite. In infinite, there is something separate from infinite that is going to be the ultimate for manifestation of ignorance. So therefore, slowly it says, now, like the children of one parents, so you are all one, first with human beings, then with other beings, like the animals, birds, insects, trees, then the living and non-living, that distinction, separateness is gradually to be less. And what is the way to lessen it? To say that without it you cannot live. Without you, it cannot live. That is why this first chapter in the Brihadaranyaka is called Madhukandam. Madhu means honey. Honey means everything is honey to everything else. Just as when I eat honey, I get so much of happiness. That means whenever any object gives me such happiness, I call it Madhu. That's why I call it dear in English language. So, everything is dear. But not only certain things are dear to me, I am also dear to other things. When a mosquito looks at me, I am Madhu to it. When a hungry tiger spices me, that I am honey, I am Madhu to it. Nice food. That is what it thinks. So, we are totally interconnected, totally dependent upon each other. If you separate, this is a beautiful analysis you should keep in mind. The whole creation is nothing but a combination of five elements. The space, the air, fire, water, and earth. And all these are interdependent. So the whole universe is interdependent. There is not one single object which is not the manifestation of these five elements, panchabhutas. But all the panchabhutas are necessary. I know that you keep vaguely in your mind all these ideas. So, I have to emphasize that one. Suppose here is a baby. He requires food to eat. He requires water to survive. He requires certain warmth, fire, which fortunately the body system keeps it as homeostasis. Then it requires oxygen every second. And then it also requires space to move here and there for activity. Therefore, no baby, no living animal can survive anything. Even for a big rock, it requires so much of space for it to occupy. Otherwise, if there is no space, a mountain cannot survive, an ocean cannot survive, a forest cannot survive. So, everything in this world is dependent upon each other. Therefore, the scripture first accepts the world and it knows these are all effects. Effects are non-different from the cause and gradually to take us to the cause. What is the cause of taking us to the cause? What is the reason? Because effect means differentiation. Even if you make two pots from clay, both are different from each other, because you can say, bring the small pot, big pot, or the pot above, pot below, pot to the left, pot to the right. If there is more than one, we require some characteristic to distinguish it. That is what is very important. And then that is called ignorance. And that will not take us out. But when every object is merged in its cause, that is called taking us to the cause. The whole universe comes out from the prithvi, earth. The earth comes from water. And water comes from fire. Fire comes from air. Air comes from space. And space is a manifestation of Atman, Brahman. So, ultimately, the cause is only one without a second. Ekameva advitiyam. We have seen in the 6th chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, Sadeva Soumya Idamagra Asit Ekameva Advitiyam. So, first, the wise teacher comes down to our level and says, yes, everything is different, but at the same time, There is something common within everyone, first. Second, one object cannot survive without a second object. In fact, we depend upon everything. Everything affects us. If you understand what is called El Nino effect, perhaps you understand what I am hinting at. That is the purpose of this upasana. Slowly to expand. Expansion means identifying. Expansion means removing the separatedness and achieving the feeling that there is no difference between me and that object. So, first we are accepting the creation, then we are accepting that creation alone as the real, not God as real. But when our intelligence grows a bit, then we understand through discrimination, there is something wrong with me, I am missing something. Then we approach humbly a teacher who says, yes, you are right, but this is the meditation you practice. Then slowly you understand you are non-separate from the other things. So this first chapter is, first section is called Adhyarupa. That is accepting the creation as it is and slowly taking one to the next step until we reach to that state where we know we are the infinite. So the second chapter is going to speak about Apavada, which we will see. So the first chapter called Madhukanda, we have seen already, and there are three upasanas are mentioned here: Ashva Upasana, Agni Upasana, Prana Upasana. So we have to have certain ideas. What is this upasana? Though I have spoken so much about this upasana in my previous classes and this class itself, but very small detail I want to tell about it. Upasana means contemplation. Contemplation means in our imagination, through our mind, we have to think, because we act and interact with this whole universe, with our body, with our own possessions, with our own mind, only through the mind. Mind alone is the root cause of ignorance. Mind alone is the root cause of liberation. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandhamokshayoh. So, in this first chapter called Madhu Brahmana, in the first three Brahmanas, three specific contemplations are given. They are in this order. First, horse, Ashva Upasana. Second, Agni or fire Upasana. Three, Prana or vital force Upasana. Here I have to tell you something, that these words and these terms and these understandings seem to be very strange to us. But in the olden days, the rishis, as Sri Ramakrishna describes, are extraordinarily pure, intelligent, capable of understanding. And they pray, they do Gayatri Upasana. Dhiyo yonaha prachodayat. May you give me the right understanding so that you can guide each one of us to your own real nature. So, an upasana, first Ashva Upasana. And just an information only. It is called Karmanga Upasana. So, Ashva Upasana is not an independent contemplation. It is a part of a bigger ritual called Ashva Medha Yajna Yaga. Yesterday I explained, a horse is let out and it is made to roam, and if everybody accepts it and pays homage to it, pays some annual rent, etc., and only a very powerful, rich, intelligent Kshatriya king can perform it. Part of that Ashvamedha Yajna is this Ashva Upasana. Now, why this Ashva Upasana? And that question comes because only one, probably in a billion, can do this Ashvamedha Yajna. And part of that Yajna is this Ashva Upasana. But what about the other people? Why should we talk about the other people?
So here the question comes, because any king who successfully concludes his Ashwamedha Yajna, he will attain the highest loka called Brahma Loka, that is incomparable happiness for a long time, unbroken bliss, but even that falls under finiteness, samsara. Therefore, one has to probably come down or make a move to move still up towards Brahman. Brahma Loka is not Brahman Loka. We have to understand that distinction. So what about others? So for that purpose, the scripture says anybody can attain to this same Brahma Loka, provided they do this Ashva Upasana. So when a contemplation is prescribed and is performed as a part of a ritual, it is called Karma Anga Upasana. That is a part of the entire big ritual. But when it is done separately without any ritual, that is called Svatantra Upasana. So for a king, he can do both Ashwamedha Yajna as well as part of it, this Upasana. But for everybody, including Brahmins, they cannot afford to do it. And therefore, they also say, I also want to go to the Brahma Loka. For that purpose, this Ashva Upasana is prescribed. So if somebody does it properly, he will also attain to the same result. A powerful king who successfully completed this, he will attain. That is the understanding. So these are two terms. Even if you forget, it doesn't matter. But it is nice if you can remember it. Karma Anga Upasana, part of a huge ritual. And Svatantra Upasana, completely independent. Anybody can do it. As a simple example, probably not inappropriate, we need not to do so many austerities like Sri Ramakrishna. But if we can meditate upon him, contemplate him, Hrade Kamala Mathye Rajitam Nirvikalpam Sat Asat Akhila Veda Atitam Ekaswarupam Prakruti Vikruti Shunyam Nityam Anandamurtim Vimala Paramahamsam Ramakrishnam Bhajamaha. If we can do it properly, then we attain Ramakrishna, we become one with Ramakrishna, and since Ramakrishna has become one with Brahman, we also become one with Brahman. Yesterday, I explained it to one of the questioner's question, what about the lokas like Vaikuntha, Kailasa, or Kingdom of Heaven or Paradise? I said that we can only reach to this level through karma. A limited effort can only give this great result, which is reaching this loka. After that, nobody can really attain Brahman through effort, through karma. And that is why Shankaracharya was so vehemently opposed. Karma cannot give mukti. What can give mukti? Only complete surrender to God alone can give mukti. Surrender, oneness with Brahman, neti neti, these are all synonymous words we have to understand. So, we will briefly deal what is this Ashva Upasana. In Ashva Upasana, that means contemplation on the horse, we should not see that horse as a mere horse. If you see a stone as a mere stone, then it is not Upasana. If you see a cross as mere two pieces of wood arranged crosswise, that is not Upasana. If somebody sees Christ and his life of sannyasa, sacrifice, that is called Upasana. If somebody can see what is the first step, Virat Upasana. We have dealt with it elaborately in the Taittiriya Upanishad when we were talking about the panchakoshas, how one ascends to the peak of Anna Maya Kosha, then he becomes Anna Brahma, then only he has the right, he has the capacity, he He has the, what you call, yogyata, fitness to enter into the next higher upasana. That is, I am prana. Not I have prana, but I am prana. Not I am an individual prana, that I am the universal prana. That is called prana brahma. I am the universal mind. That is called the mano, I am mano brahma. Then I am the right understanding, absolutely truth understanding, and not only my own individual understanding, I am that same understanding who is manifesting as understanding in the whole universe. That is called Vijnana Brahma. And then not only I am happy, but I am anybody, everybody's happiness is my happiness. That is called Anandamaya Brahma. But even that also, I am there, but Brahman also is there in a separation. But only a person who reached that Anandamaya Brahma, only he understands the next step, who can ascend the next step. So the teacher, according to the fitness of the student, gradually takes one step by step, however long it takes, it doesn't matter. Like a loving mother who helps some children learn quickly to crawl, then to stand up, then to run, but some people take longer time. So for that purpose, the mother has to patiently, joyfully lead the small child until the small child also can reach. But it may not be in one life, it can be in several lives. It is the same motherliness who manifests in the next birth also, but in the instrument called another woman. That's all. We do not understand that. So, we should not see a horse as a mere horse. That is not upasana. Then, what should we do? If we see the horse as Virat, as Hiranyagarbha, as Prajapati, these are three names, as Mahat, then it becomes an upasana. A small stone, and to look upon it as a small stone is not upasana, I just mentioned. But to look upon it as a veritable Vishnu, a cross, as a veritable Christ, that is called upasana. A small object glorified as a greater object is the upasana. Now, the question here is, we are discussing about Ashva Upasana, contemplation on a horse. Naturally, the question comes that why did they choose a horse? Because just like a few years earlier, a bicycle is the most common vehicle. Practically everybody knew how to ride a bicycle. So in those olden days, even anywhere, west or east, a horse was the vehicle. And a horse, it takes, not only helps us in traveling, it helps in cultivation, and even mare's milk is used, you know, these Mongolians called Genghis Khans. They use it to ride small, short mares. They have extraordinary capacity, even under the most difficult climbing situations. They can move faster. So these Mongols, they use it to prefer these mares. Why? Because when they are hungry, they can just take a bit of the milk and blood, mix them. That is the highest ensure powder that they discovered in those days, probably better than anything else in this world. So, everybody requires that strength, that stamina. And horses were very common, animals used in for different purposes, for cultivation, for taking care, for milk, for so many other purposes. Even the dung of the horse is one of the greatest fertilizers. And therefore, they have taken this one. So therefore, in the olden days, even nowadays, if we want to do contemplation, we take what is most commonly available thing. In those days, this horse is used, and even if some people cannot afford a horse, they know what is a horse. So, and horses are used cows are used, bulls are used in these special worships called Gometha, Ashwametha. Even we hear of Narametha, Nrumetha, human beings also as vehicles, instruments of higher contemplations. So, Ashve, Virat Upasana. Seeing in that Ashva, Virat Upasana. How to see that universal in this one simple horse? That means you take every part of the horse and compare each part of the horse with the corresponding part of the universe. By comparing the parts of the horse with Virat, seeing the horse is considered equal to seeing the Virat. And this is what the Upanishad wants to tell us. So, if we do not like a horse, you can take Krishna, you can take Rama, you can take Kali, any, if you are born as a Hindu, or if you adopt Hinduism, then what is called 330 crores of objects are available for your Upasana. No doubt about it. Let me first of all salute all those who discovered these highest truths, including these Upasanas. They are called Rishis. Therefore, we have to, today we are able to get help because of the hardness. They are like the mother who eats food for the baby, produces milk, and that milk nourishes the baby. We are like that babies. These rishis are like our mothers. That is why Shastra is called, compared to a mother, just as a loving mother, lovingly guides the child to grow up in every way, physically, mentally, emotionally, etc. So these rishis want us to slowly manifest our divinity within. That was what that rishi brought from the Saptarshi Mandala by Sri Ramakrishna, later on called Swami Vivekananda. That is what he said. Uttishtata, Jagrata, Prapyavara, Nibodhata. We have to understand that. So, this is the salutation mantra. Om Namo Brahmadibhyo Brahma Vidya Sampradaya Kartrubhyo Vamsha Rishibhyo Mahadbhyo Namo Gurubhya. Namo Gurubhya. Salutations to all the gurus. What type of gurus? Mahadbhya. Greatest people on earth. They are called Vamsa Rishis. Through their Vamsa, through their lineage, they propagated those highest truths which are beneficial to everybody. Not only to their own lineage, to their own disciples. And that is called Sampradaya Kartrubhya. Sampradaya means unbroken tradition from the teacher to the disciple. And what type of knowledge they were propagating? Brahma Vidya Sampradaya Kartrubhyo. So Brahma Vidya, this is coming from time, unimaginable, timeless time. And so Namo, salutations, Brahmadibhyo. That is, they are none other than Brahman themselves. So right from Brahman, Brahman manifested through these rishis and then he revealed little by little to each rishi, and what they realized, they passed it on to their disciples, and that came passed on to Totapuri Maharaj, that passed on to Sri Ramakrishna, passed on to Swami Vivekananda, passed on to Swami Brahmananda, and through other disciples, it came to all of us. If I am speaking today, it is all belonging to them. The thankfulness should only go to them because I am only a pipe. That is how we have to understand. Very briefly, I want to, because even the recitation of these mantras are highly purifying, even when we do not understand their meaning. Here goes the first Adhyaya Madhukanda, first Brahmana, it has two mantras, and we will first chant the first mantra. Ushava Ashvasya Medhyasya Siraha Surya Chakshuhu Vataha Prano Vyattam Agnihi Vaishvanaraha Samvatsaraha Atma Ashvasya Medhyasya Dyauhu Prishtham Antariksham Udaram Prithivi Panchasyam Dishaha Parshve अवांतर दिश पर्शव ऋतवो अंगानी मासाश्च अर्थमासाश्च पर्वाणि अहोरात्राणि प्रतिष्ठा नक्षत्राणि अस्तीनि नभो मासानि अवध्य असिकताः सिन्धवो उदा यकृच्छक्लोमानस्य पर्वता ओषधयश्च वनस्पतयश्च लोमानि उद्यन् पूर्वार्थो निम्लोचन् जगनार्थो यद्विजृम्भते तद्विद्योतते यद्विधूनुते तत् संतयति तन्मेहति तद्वर्षति वागेव अस्य वाक्. दिस इज द फर्स्ट मंत्र एंड आई जस्ट रीड आउट दिस प्लेन सिंपल मीनिंग. ओम वेरिली द हेड ऑफ द सैक्रिफिशियल हॉर्स इज द डॉन ईस्टर्न साइड. इट्स आई इज द सन. इट्स वाइटल ब्रेथ इज द विंड. इट्स ओपन माउथ द वैश्वानर ऑफ फायर. एंड द ट्रंक ऑफ द सैक्रिफिशियल हॉर्स इज द ईयर. The back is the heaven. The belly the intermediate region. The hoof the earth. The sides the four quarters. The ribs the intermediate quarters. The limbs the seasons. The joints the months and half months. The feet the days and nights. The bones the stars. The flesh the clouds. Its half digested food is the sand. The blood vessels are the rivers. The liver and lungs are the mountains. The hair, the herbs and the trees. The fore part of the horse is the rising sun. And the hinder part of the horse is the setting sun. Its yawn is lightning. Its shaking of the body is thunder. Its water is rain. And its neighing is indeed voice. What does all this description really mean? You look at this universe. You will see all these things. All the four directions are there. East, west, south, north. The mountains are there. The rivers are there. The five elements are there. Everything that you can imagine. And everything, if something is lacking, this universe will not be complete. All that is attributed. You think of this part of the horse as this. What is happening? When we contemplate like that, the horse disappears. What appears? This whole universal universe. But that universal Atma, Virat. So when we look at the horse, it is nothing but Virat. And lest we may be still be confused, I can tell you one thing. Take any object, doesn't matter. So you take a small image. There is a head. There is a neck and there is a backside. There is a front side. There are hands. We have seen in the Panchakosha Vivarana, like a human being, left hand, right hand, right, left leg, right leg, and the middle back, and the front part, and the head, and the neck, and the ears, and the eyes. You can take anything, provided your purpose is to transform that particular person. That is how when we say, let me think of my mother as Brahman, Devata, Deva, Matru Devo Bhava. So whenever you look at the mother, you first of all compare every part of the mothers to every part of the entire divine mother. Identify one's own mother as a divine mother. M once asked Sri Ramakrishna, can I meditate upon my own mother as the divine mother? Sri Ramakrishna said, why not? She is the best symbol, representation of the divine mother. So, this horse is only a one object, but it is not restrained to that object. So, what is the result of it? Today I will tell you very briefly. Suppose a person who is doing this contemplation, and he has to ride a horse. What do you think that person does? I am being carried by God himself. You think Bhagavan Vishnu comes from Vaikuntha, flying through that Garuda? These are all symbols. What is the symbolism of the symbol? Garuda means our guru. He who carries God brings God nearer to us. Like Hanuman, he has brought the news of Mother Sita by flying, by crossing the samsara. And then only Rama went there. Because we cannot go to God. God has to come to us. So that is the purpose of the upasana. So he thinks, you are carrying me from a lower place to a higher place. Suppose that Kshatriya is fighting a war. How should he think of the animal? That you bring me victory because the sword I am carrying is Bhagavan's sword, Bhagavan's chakra, Bhagavan's Sudarshana chakra, gada. If I am using a stick, that is Bhagavan's gada. If he does the contemplation like that, then it will be wonderful. Such things really happen. Actually, it happened. And if you remember Sri Ramakrishna's wonderful story, there was a king who was a Krishna Bhakta, and somehow the enemy king came to know that this person will not come out of the shrine room of Krishna until noon. So if I attack, then nobody will oppose me. Because without the king's commandment, nothing moves. He has to tell, let us go and fight. Otherwise, nobody will move one millimeter from wherever he is until the king commands. So he was killing the soldiers wherever he could fight. Then suddenly the king had a very special horse. And that horse, nobody dares to ride it, touch it, excepting looking after it. Suddenly an young man came and then he caught hold of that horse and immediately ran away before anybody could stop him. And he alone fought with the enemy king, destroyed the enemy king. And then when the king came out, he saw his horse. From its mouth, foam was coming out as if it has been used. The king got angry. He asked, who has been using my horse? He said, we don't know. A stranger came, an extraordinary person, that we could not do anything. We were just rooted to this spot. And he rode. He conquered that enemy king. An enemy has attacked your kingdom. And then he came back after felling everything, destroying all these enemies. And then he came here. And he disappeared. The king was astonished. He understood, probably a little bit. So he again went to the battlefield. Saw the enemy king. He was not harmed, but he was lying prostrate. As soon as he saw, he fell, sashtanga pranam, at the feet of this king, who never knew what happened, and said, who is that soldier? He alone destroyed all my armies, and I wanted to fight him, but absolutely I had no power. Not only that, I want to offer myself as a slave to that person. He is so, what is called, immensely attractive that I cannot separate myself from him. And that thought of him doesn't leave me. Please tell me about that soldier. I want to fall at his feet and beg him to take me as his servant. Then the king understood. When he was absorbed in Krishna upasana, Krishna himself had taken the form of the soldier and destroyed, not only destroyed, he destroyed the enmity of the enemy king. This is not a story. This is one of the most marvelous, what you call, illustrations of the upasana phala. Everybody becomes a friendliest person because we are the greatest friends of our own self. Beautiful thoughts. There are many such thoughts. In course of time, we will talk about them. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhoho. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.